Juliet Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello, and welcome to episode 79 of Dogcast Radio. And yes, it's time for another Christmas episode. Here's a special Christmas message from Buddy.
If you enjoy Buddy's Diary on Dogcast Radio, you might be interested to know that there's now a book available. It has loads of my diary in it, as well as the great short stories and interesting articles from Dogcast Radio, plus some stuff you haven't heard or seen before. If you're looking for a Christmas present for a dog lover, or you know someone who would enjoy Dogcast Radio but doesn't have internet access, or maybe you'd just like to treat yourself, check out Buddy's Diary plus fiction and short stories from Dogcast Radio. You'll find more details on the Dogcast Radio website. And don't I look handsome on the front cover. See you soon.
In this show, we have Dogs Today editor Beverly Cuddy talking about the Tail Waggers charity.
The lovely thing about this charity is that we don't have fixed rules and regulations. We are able to take every case on its individual merits.
We also have a special Christmas fiction feature. But before all that, we have an interview with Cynthia Miller. Cynthia shares her life with two Maltese dogs called Lulu and Lolly. Talented dogs who have their own website. And Cynthia wants us to change the way we talk and think about rescue dogs.
Well, first of all, thanks for talking to me, and I'll let you know I have Lulu and Lolly. I'm sitting in a red chair in my house, and Lulu and Lolly like to sit behind me on the chair. So they're here, too. So now they're currently napping, but we'll let you know if they feel obligated to get up and yell into the phone as well. But Lulu and Lolly are my two little Maltese dogs, and I rescued Lolly from a shelter about 9 years ago, and she had had a many horrible experiences. And in that process, I got involved in rescue work. I was actually doing work at the shelter before I adopted her. And so I got involved in the whole rescue community and became a lot more aware of what was going on. And it seemed to me that everything was kind of grim and depressing, and through a series of events, I decided that maybe we could really benefit by talking about things in kind of a goofy, funny, whimsical way as well. I work in advertising, and we would call it the soft sell, which is, you know, kind of getting people roped in through humor and fun, and then once they're in, kind of say, oh, yeah, and by the way, this is a rescue dog. And by the way, there are lots of great rescue dogs. And try to open people's minds, you know, basically using humor.
Yeah, yeah. Now, it's really interesting you say that because, you know, obviously you must have ads on television in the States. We do here for, you know, Dogs Trust or RSPCA or whatever. And you're right, they do go, they sort of go for the sub-story approach, you know, and they tell you about the dog's background. And it is very, very moving, you know.
Yes.
But
yes.
You do look at them and you think, oh, you know, I would really like to help. I'd like to talk about Rescue Dog Rock, but just briefly to mention the video that goes with Rescue Dog Rock. When I watched your video, that was the first time I've ever seen something about rescue dogs that actually made me think, wow, I want one of those. You know, it's really, really positive.
Well, I'm glad it had that effect, and that's the intended effect. And yes, in the States, we all the messaging for the, it seems like, is very, it's all in the sob story vein. And I think that has an important role. I'm not knocking that role at all. Appealing to people's sense of compassion is certainly important, too, and has certainly been effective. But I started asking friends of mine who were buying dogs, well, hey, would you consider getting one from, you know, the shelter or a rescue group? And they would say, ooh, they would just kind of, you know, clench up and say, oh, I know, it's so sad, and I don't know, I can't handle it. And then I started surveying people. And I have, to this day, there's a one very popular very sad advertisement on, and I started surveying people, and to this day, I think I'm up to about 250 people, and I have yet to find anyone who says that they've been able to watch that all the way through. So I started to think, wait a minute, we're losing all these people who turn away because they can't handle it. It's not that they're not compassionate. It's quite the opposite. They're so compassionate that they're just overwhelmed, you know, by all these sad pictures and that sort of thing. So I actually work in advertising, and I thought, you know, let's put the advertising hat on here and think about what's going on. And so these people that we're losing, what if we got them in, you know, again, through stuff that was funny and humorous? And what inspired Rescue Dog Rock actually was something that happened before. I had made this calendar that's really goofy and again, you know, featuring Lulu and Lolly, and Lolly being this former, I mean, Lolly's got a story that you could make the most sobbing sob story out of ever, but we don't talk about that. We now we're at a different place, and that's what we celebrate. But after I got that calendar, Ladies Home Journal did a feature about it in a couple months ago. And I started getting all of this response, and I got letters that literally included people saying things like, I've had dogs for 14 years, and it never occurred to me, and I love them, they're my life, it never occurred to me to go to the shelter until I read your article. And it was people who immediately had seen the sad stuff and immediately shut down and turned away from it. And then the article they'd written about what we were up to was all funny pictures, and it was all very fizzy and upbeat. And they it's like they weren't scared anymore to kind of go touch that topic. So we started getting all of this input, and that's really what inspired Rescue Dog Rock, which I'm so thrilled that it had that impact on you, because that is the purpose, to make people think, wow, this is, you know, a totally fun and upbeat thing to go do to have a rescue dog, as opposed to like something I should do out of simply guilt and compassion. So that's exactly it. We're trying to associate happiness and joy with the rescue dog, so that people think, hey, you know, rescue dog is a happy, joyful thing.
Yeah, yeah, it certainly does work. Because as I say, it was, instead of thinking, yeah, I would like to do the right thing and take one on, it really made me stop and look and go, wow, yeah, I've got to get one of those. They look great, right. You know.
Well, people are, yeah, I mean, we're motivated, you know, we're ultimately self-interested creatures. So, you know, you buy that toothpaste on TV because if you buy the toothpaste, you're automatically not only going to have sparkling teeth, but apparently an incredibly handsome love interest, probably a yacht, you know, and beautiful clothing, right? So hey, get a rescue dog and you'll also have a lot of good things.
Yes, yeah. So tell us about Rescue Dog Rock.
Well, it's actually a lot of fun to talk about. Rescue Dog Rock was a song that I wrote, and I need to give credit where credit's due, or he'll be very grumpy, and that's to my husband, Dean Rendy, who actually, all joking aside, was a really big help with the lyrics as well. And it was my attempt to flip this message totally on its head. So the chorus sings, arf, 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 and a woof, woof, too, you think you rescue us, but we really rescue you. And all the verses are actually about real rescue dogs and the fun things the ways that they've actually rescued their humans. For example, there's a line that says, Ed's adopted human says, thank goodness for him. Before he came along, she didn't know how to swim. And we show a picture of this wonderful dog, Ed, just leaping into a pool where his human is, and they're swimming along. Well, we all know that Ed didn't really teach Kathy how to swim, but we tried to do the whole thing from the dog's point of view. And from the dog's point of view, I very much believe that they probably sit there and go, boy, we have really helped these humans out a lot. So it was fun. All of the dogs in it are real rescue dogs. They're actually dogs of friends of mine. We've got Chloe teaching her human how to drive a car. We've got Georgie helping his humans find the cookie jar, which includes footage of two little kids looking very naughty along with their dog and cookies everywhere and stuff like that. Now, the chorus, let me tell you, that chorus is probably the hardest project I've ever taken on. The chorus is nine dogs in a grid, so it's three across and three down, kind of like a Hollywood Squares or a Brady Bunch grid, which both allusions date me, of course. But anyway, it's these nine dogs barking, and they bark in along with the chorus. So the chorus is arf, 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 and a woof, woof, too, and we show this grid where they're all barking, and Lulu actually barks in the rhythm arf, arf, arf. So that kind of inspired that. Now let me tell you, here's what I found out. You put a dog on a table in front of a camera and say, bark into the camera. It does not bark into the camera. Instead, Instead, the dog very logically tries to get off the table. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, well, this idiot human, you know, it never occurred to me that this is what the dogs do. I thought, oh, this will be easy. We'll just, you know, we have a pink backdrop behind them because those are our colors, of this deep pink background behind them. And I thought, this will be easy. We just put them on the table with a pink background and say, oh, look, here's a treat. Bark and we'll give it to you. You know, and dogs, we're always trying to get the dogs not to bark, right? Mm. Oh, no. They just clam up and just spend all their time trying to get off this table, which is too high to jump off of. And it's just this big dilemma. So I wound up having to enlist the help of a wonderful dog trainer here in Austin who is really personally committed, to trying to spread this message too. And he made this happen. Lee Mannix, he was wonderful. He made this happen. So he basically got the dogs on the table one by one and figured out ways to get them to bark. And I actually was pretty traumatized during this whole thing because I thought, oh no, am I psychologically damaging the dogs? Am I psychologically damaging their humans? But Lee assured me that there was no psychological damage going on. And he would just basically create a moment of frustration so that the dog would bark. For example, if a human was outside with a ball, you know, and the dog loves to play the ball, the human would be outside saying, oh, I've got your ball, I've got your ball. And eventually the dog would start barking too. So we filmed all these dogs separately and then in editing put them in the grid. And the irony is that Lolly, who is, of course, you know, my rescue dog that started all of this madness, she is the one we could not ever get to bark no matter what.
Oh.
But of course Lulu is a complete loudmouth and she was, you know, barking head over heels from the beginning. But we decided, so what we did is we got Lolly, I put a piece of chicken on the end of a stick and we moved it around so that Lolly followed it with her face and her eyes. So it looks like she's just kind of looking around and we put her in the top middle section of the grid. And so it looks like she's just looking at all the other dogs kind of like, what is going on? But anyway, it really looks as crazy as it sounds, but that's a little bit about Rescue Dog Rock. So.
Yeah, that's great. For anybody that would like to go and see it, and I guess having heard about it, you know, most people are going to want to go and see it now. We'll put a link on because it's on YouTube, isn't it?
It is, and we've got it on our website too. And our website is luluandlolly.com, which is luluandlolly.com, you know, www.luluandlolly.com.
Yeah.
And we've got Rescue Dog Rock on that as well. So, yeah, everybody rock out with Rescue Dog Rock.
Now,
rock on. That's what we like to say.
Absolutely. Now, Lulu and Lolly's site, can you tell us something about that? Because that's very pink and it's very much of the girls, isn't it?
Yes, and it's perfect that you said it's very pink because that's actually one of my metaphors for all of this, which is let's try to do this. I'll say this is, you know, trying to bring pink into things. And I think that we all know that pink's a very happy and girly color, and that's the image that I want to portray of Lulu and Lolly, and that is them. They are extremely happy, and they are very pink themselves, but they also have plenty of attitude. So I've tried to capture that and really build that into the site. One of the things that I love about their story personally is that when we adopted Lolly, we had little Miss Thing Lulu already, and she had all the confidence in the world because she had been born into my household. I had her mother. And she had never known anything but just, you know, love and security. So, like I said, all the confidence in the world.
Mm.
Well, the neat thing is that Lolly, who had tons of issues with humans, Lulu just took Lolly under wing and pretty much from the beginning just said, okay, here's the deal. You're now officially my best friend forever and my sister, and this is the way it's going to be.
Aww.
And yeah, and Lolly is really, really attached to Lulu, and Lulu, of course, is very attached to Lolly too, but Lolly, it's just the most wonderful, charming thing. If Lulu, you know, if I leave, if for some reason Lulu needs something, it will be Lolly who will come to tell me. You know, it's Lolly is so in love with her sister. She just adores her and appreciates her. And from the very beginning, it was Lulu's just unconditional love and adoption of Lolly that Lolly really responded to. And so, you know, Dean and I, of course, think we contributed to the situation, but that Lulu really gets credit, and it was so neat to watch them. So at the same time, they are sisters, and I really do think that I can tell when they're a little bit put off with each other. And so we've captured a lot of that, I think, in the website, too. So you'll see many of their kind of daily stories. And Lolly's ambition is to be a world-famous journalist. And so she spends a lot of time, quote-unquote, writing, which often involves chewing on pencils. She's working on a story right now. And much of this is hidden from me, but occasionally I find the evidence of these things. Lolly is working on a story right now about a Chihuahua named Chuck, who was a cow herder in the 19th century in Utah in the United States, and then had an unfortunate incident with a runaway farm cart and had to rethink his career. And after much toil and struggle, he figured out that if he put peanut M&Ms in stew, that it became really good, and he got to be the head of what they started calling a chuck wagon. And to Lolly's mind, the moral of the story is that if you work really hard and have a good attitude, that you can get a job that matches, a career that matches your name, since he was Chuck and he got to be head of a chuck wagon. Mm-hmm. So this is what Lolly likes to spend a lot of her time doing. Lulu's ambition is to be a professional wrestler, but she's only 5.5 pounds and she can't get anybody to take her seriously on this. So anyway, and they have a lot of trauma with the squirrels, because the squirrels are always throwing nuts at them and stuff like this. So on our site, we have a dog blog, otherwise known as a D-log, where Lulu and Lolly talk about some of these things, but they also really love to get pictures and information and stories from other people and then comment on these things. For example, we just got a picture from four Bichons in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and we had a lively discussion about whether the four Bichons had a hard time telling each other apart, because Lulu and Lolly sometimes get confused when they look in the mirror. And, you know, if Lulu's gotten into the hamburgers again and has ketchup on her face, then Lolly will scream and pass out because Lolly thinks she's bleeding, and it's always very confusing until they straighten out. So we have a lot of discussion like this, and we've actually had people from as far away as Taiwan write in with a lot of concerns. And we're finding that dogs everywhere do share a lot of similar concerns, mainly about their humans' obsession with jobs. Lulu and Lolly have a very firm belief about jobs versus careers. Jobs are not good, because jobs are things that humans do that keep them away from their dogs. Careers are things that you choose to do. Like Lolly wants to have a writing career, and that will be her choice, and she will do it when she wants. And Lulu wants to have a professional wrestling career, and she will do that when she wants. But amazingly enough, it turns out that canines universally share this attitude about humans spending a lot of time at their jobs and instead of spending all of their time with their dogs. By the way, Lulu and Lolly are they keep putting this on their blog. They would really like to have panda bears and giraffes write in. We've had some cats write in and a llama, but they're still looking for panda bears and giraffes in particular. So if there are any panda bears or giraffes listening, please.
I could organize some ducks that could write in.
Excellent. That would be excellent. That would be great. Okay. Let's hear from the ducks.
I will give them a pencil and some paper and see what they come up with.
Excellent. That's very good. So basically on our website, we try to, we talk about Lulu and Lolly, and their story on the website is how they borrowed the humans' credit cards and took a road trip because they were bored and needed a vacation. And that's what led to all of this originally. They went out and had all these crazy adventures, and then they got in a lot of trouble because of something they still don't understand, which involves words like bankruptcy and maxing out credit cards. And so that's led to a lot of issues that they're trying to resolve. And so we do different fun things, and it's buried in there that Lolly's a rescue, but again, it's all trying in the soft sell. And then what we do is we pick shelters that we are supporting and trying to call attention to, and then we give the profits from the items that we sell to different shelters. So that's a lot of the function, obviously, of the website, too, is to move product on behalf of dogs.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to come to that because you have some of the money that Lulu and Lolly have raised has helped dogs affected by Hurricane Katrina, hasn't it?
Yeah. That's actually another part of this is that when, I had started having all of these wacky ideas and been thinking about this, and then when Katrina happened, that was just a kind of the straw that broke the camel's back for me and really motivated me to quit thinking and to try to do something. I guess it's because we're here in Texas and Katrina, happened in New Orleans, which is really our neighbor, and so many refugees came to the state. We were all involved in helping them find shelter and all this sort of stuff. And I just the stories of the people and the pets being ripped apart. I mean, to this day, I just think they're one of the most awful things. Mm. And I think all of us who have a human pet family know that to rip that bond apart is so devastating on so many levels. Those animals to lose their pack like that, I mean, how traumatic. And then the people who lost their loved ones, how traumatic. And it was awful. I mean, they weren't allowed to take their pets. It was just horrible. Mm. So then I really wanted to do something to try to help. And that's when I decided, I really wrestled with it. I thought, you know what, I'm going to invest this personal money in this project. And I'm no fool. I'm not going to single-handedly, revolutionize the world. But I do believe that if you drop a pebble in the ocean, even if it's as small as a pebble in the ocean, it does have ripples. And if the ripples mean that 10 people look at dogs differently, that's a great start because 10 people will pass that on to their kids and their friends. And eventually it's more and more. But I really wrestled with this because I thought, I'm going to invest this money. Should I just, write a check to... I mean, I'd written checks already to the Humane Society and my local shelter. And should I just keep writing checks? And I thought, okay, no, I'm going to take this gamble and I'm going to hope that I can do something that pays off in a different way. And I've got the resources in the sense that I've got these two dogs that have inspired the heck out of me. And I've got, I work in advertising. I'm used to making images. And so let me just try to utilize these resources that have come into my life and try to channel those forward. So Katrina thing, I was, like I said, I had given money to the Humane Society that was helping in Louisiana, all this sort of stuff. And then I said, okay, that's it. I'm going to try to start going down this path that I've conceived of. Well, I made these calendars actually originally in 2007. That was the first thing. And I actually just was offering them to people. Look, you sell them. It's really funny and different. It's, a doggy road trip calendar where Lulu and Lolly write postcards home every month. And it's like, dear folks, guess what? Snowboarding, dear folks, guess what? Skydiving is awesome. It's just like hanging your head out of the car window when you go down the highway. Only jump out of a plane, too. Love, Lulu. P.S. Mm. Lolly says hi, and she'll write when they take the cast off. Or, dear folks, camping is awesome. Also, the coyotes seemed very nice, and I'm sure they'll bring Lolly back any day now. Love, Lulu. So it's always like this. So it's just these crazy adventure pictures with these crazy postcards. Well, I was started saying to people here, I invested the money to make them and print them, sell them, to make money. And the Humane Society in Louisiana at that time was even so overwhelmed. They were like, it just blew my mind how overwhelmed they were. So I said, okay, I'm not just going to just make one little foray here. They're going to try to stay at the top of my radar. And this year, a publisher in Canada picked up my calendar, which was really neat. And there, it's for sale on my website, and then it's for sale at the Calendar Club. And we got hooked up with a really great group. I mean, this is just a total two paws up group. They're called ARNA, which is Animal Rescue New Orleans. And this group is so neat. This is just ordinary folks. It is people who are accountants, stay-at-home moms, advertising execs, bankers, it is waitresses, it's just average folks living in New Orleans. And none of them were quote-unquote pet rescue experts, but they said, all we knew is that we loved our pets and this was never going to happen again. Arno formed, yeah, they banded together, they formed this group, and Arno, to this day, is still, 3 years later, still reuniting these pet and human families that have been separated. Recently, they reunited a family that had relocated to Houston with the kittens of that family's cat.
The cat didn't
make it, and 2 out of 5, I think if I'm right, of the kittens didn't make it, but 3 kittens, they reunited.
Wow.
I mean, isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
And this is just people like you and me, just average Joes or Janes, who just banded together and said, we refuse. We refuse to let this happen. It's really stunning what's still going on there. So Arno is this amazing group, and this year, as part of the proceeds that we've raised, went to Lolly's shelter that she came from here in Austin. We got hooked up with another really neat energetic group in Wisconsin called North Central Maltese Rescue. Basically, we've used our website and the attention and traffic we're getting to then try to reroute that to the work of Arno and other groups as well. But they have been our focus for a little while. And that Rescue Dog Rock was supposed to be a vehicle for that as well. So all of this wacky stuff to try to get attention, you know, directed at them in kind of a different way. And I think it's, you know, I think it's all good.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do talk to them.
Join the club. I absolutely agree with you that one person can make a difference. And so many of the people that I've interviewed, things have started with one person. And often it's been a woman who said, you know what, we need to do this, or that's not acceptable, or whatever the motivation is, you know. And obviously I'm talking about doggy people here because that's who I get to interview. And they do make a difference, and they involve other people, and they really make a difference. And I think you are making such a difference for rescue dogs.
Well, that's really sweet of you. I hope that's the case. I like I said, I still have my moments, to be honest, of, you know, real self-doubt, and where I say, oh my gosh, I am just such, you know, I'm a fool. I'm an idiot. Why didn't I just write checks to shelters? Because I have invested, you know, what to me is a significant amount of my personal money. But I guess then I get through those moments and I remember, no, I go through it all in my head again rationally. And I just really do believe that if we also talk about rescue dogs, not as something just to be pitied, but as something to celebrate, that I really do believe that we'll hook in other folks. And actually, that's not true. I know that we will, because of the response I've gotten. We're literally people I'll never meet, from states I've never been to, write to me and say, wow, I had never, ever thought about, you know, I just never considered it. I'd blocked it out until I saw your happy pictures, and then I wanted to read the story because of the happy pictures, and then, it just kind of, you know, blew my mind. Like, oh, that's a rescue dog? And I think that what we all know who've adopted dogs is that the healing and the lessons they bring to us, lessons sound so moralizing, but the healing and the awareness they bring to us is really so amazing. So when we wrote that song, You Think You Rescue Us, But We Really Rescue You, kind of being, I'm going to use a British word, cheeky. I think I'm using it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of being cheeky from the dog's point of view. I think we all know there's a lot of truth in that. Like you said, you know what? If a few other people think about it differently, then, hey, they'll pay it forward, and hopefully we'll do something that way. One last thing. Lulu and Lolly, you know, they've become very adept at typing on a computer due to all of their dog blogging. Their spelling is not so good, and they apparently have not figured out how to work this spell checker. This is an ongoing challenge. But they are typing a message for me here. Let's see, Lulu was pawing on my head, and if they would really like me to say a massive 2 paws up to all your listeners, and also a personal shout out to Buddy and Star, which are your doggies, and
they
look incredibly happy.
To find out more about the girls, visit their website, where you can buy a Lulu and Lolly 2009 calendar, telling the story of their further adventures and raising more money for charity. I'm assured no home is complete without one. Also, don't forget to check out Rescue Dog Rock while you're at the website. As usual, you'll find the relevant links and photos in the show notes on the Dogcast Radio website. You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com. A dog's rules for Christmas. Be patient if they try to decorate you. They seem to think antlers and red hats suit you. And now, 2 Minute Fiction. Christmas Shopping, written and read by Julie Hill. Catherine stood in the shop and squeezed the dog toy between her fingers. It was sturdy enough to withstand the strongest and sharpest of canine teeth, surely. It consisted of brightly coloured rubber rings threaded onto a thick rope. It caught the eye, it should stand up to boisterous play, and it even smelled good. She came to a decision and took the toy to the counter. "What breed of dog you got, then?" the pet shopkeeper asked as he handed her the change. He had seen her before, and it was good business practice to befriend regular customers. "Oh, I don't have a dog," she smiled at him and walked out of the shop. At home, she stowed the dog toy with a variety of other items she kept in a safe, private place, and smiled again as she thought of the dog that would one day benefit from them. She knew the time was not yet right for her to get a dog of her own. Her children were young and demanded all her attention. But one day, she knew the time would be right. The next week, when she did her shopping, she selected a pack of tennis balls. Again, it pleased her to imagine a dog chasing after them. Perhaps a border collie, a German shepherd, or even a Springer spaniel. Something with lots of energy that would be stimulated by the movement and welcome the chance to work off some high spirits. When she paid, the pet shopkeeper tried to engage her in conversation again. "If you don't have a dog of your own, are you buying this for a friend's dog?" he asked. "Something like that," she told him as she pocketed the change. The next week, she visited a charity shop and bought a soft, luxurious bedspread. She pictured it offering comfort to an older dog, perhaps a gentle-natured greyhound who could spend his retirement relaxing on the bedspread. She rubbed the fabric between her fingers before she put it safely away. The week after that, Catherine didn't have much money to spare, so it was just a small packet of treats that joined her stash. But she knew it would come in handy eventually. Perhaps to reward a Labrador during training, or persuade a feisty terrier to cooperate. You never knew when the enticement of a treat would come in useful with a dog. As time passed, she bought and put away more and more items. A stand that would raise a water or food bowl higher for a larger dog. She envisaged a Great Dane, or perhaps an Irish wolfhound making use of it, and hoped they would be glad of not having to stoop so low. She had no preference for smaller or larger dogs. She liked all breeds. She just liked dogs in general. She bought Kongs of various sizes to suit everything from a Dachshund to a St. Bernard, not knowing what would be required. She also bought distraction toys, balls which had holes from which treats dropped when they were rolled around by a dog. She knew dogs disliked to be left alone too long, and liked to have their brains occupied, as well as having their bodies exercised. Maybe a poodle, which she knew was an intelligent breed, would enjoy the distraction toys. She talked with her children about the dog they would one day bring into their family, and about the preparations they needed to make, and how it would change their lives. They had clear ideas about the kind of dog they wanted, but they knew, young as they were, that it would be a big responsibility. Catherine made sure of that. As time went by, she added dog food to the stash of doggy items she had, ensuring they contained only the healthiest of ingredients. Finally, the time was right for all her treasure to be used. It was Christmas Eve when she told the children that the day had finally arrived, and they were just as excited as she was. It took them many journeys, but eventually every last item was loaded into the car, and she and the children strapped themselves in. It was a short journey, and one she had made many times, at first as a passenger in her parents' car, and it was a tradition she was glad to continue with her own children. She parked in the dog shelter car park, and the staff welcomed them as old friends. It took less time to unload the car, as they had help from several staff members. They thanked Catherine and the children for their donations, and assured her that the canine residents would welcome them. Many people brought donations to the shelter to ensure the dogs spent a happy Christmas and had their lives in the centre enriched as much as possible. But none gave as much or as regularly as Catherine, though all were greatly appreciated. Afterwards, Catherine and her children walked hand in hand around the shelter, looking at the dogs living there. The children chatted excitedly, while Catherine indulged in daydreams about one day coming here to choose a dog to accompany them home. One day, the time would be right for them, she knew, though not just yet. In the meantime, though, she smiled, there was always next Christmas to plan for. And that was Christmas Shopping, written and read by Julie Hill. A Dog's Rules for Christmas. A lot of pictures will be taken. Be sure you get in the middle of the group and smile at the camera. At this time of year, we think about giving to our family and friends and to those who are most in need of help. It may be Christmas, but we can't rustle up a fairy godmother. We can, however, bring you the next best thing, a furry godmother. Dogs Today editor Beverly Cuddy, talking about a special charity that's close to her heart, Tail Waggers.
Tail Waggers Club Trust is a really ancient charity that very few people have heard about these days, but before the war, it was probably one of the most famous charities in Britain. And the Queen was the patron of nearly every famous person, every lord and lady who loved dogs. And almost every member of the public was a member of it. And for some reason, it used to be part of the Daily Mirror. There was their own club, and everyone who had a dog virtually had a little medal on their dog's collar that says, "My dog's a friend of others and is a tail wagger." And over the years, they made a huge amount of money that they used for great charitable projects. They started Guide Dogs for the Blind. They gave Guide Dogs the initial donation. They did lots and lots of other amazing things. And then, I don't know, after the war, something happened and it sort of faded and faded. But there was a pot of money that was left at the end that was put into trust. And for many years, this trust existed to give grants out to people who were struggling with their pets. And they gave big donations to things like the Animal Health Trust and other places. But in all those years, nobody actually tried to raise any money for the trust. They just spent the money.
Oh.
And I came in probably about, oh, I don't know, probably about 5 or 6 years ago, because I stumbled upon this charity at various stages, mainly because I invented an organisation called Tail Waggers Against Docking and infringed their copyright.
Right.
And they sent me a very nice letter saying, "Oi, you're using our name, but if you give us 200 quid, we'll let you get away with it because we quite like what you're doing." And I said, "Well, what do you do?" I said, "Oh, we help people in trouble with their pets." I said, "I'd never heard of you." I said, "Well, people find us." And so I was intrigued, found out more about it, and I ended up getting involved, and I've ended up now being the chairman of this ancient and wonderful organisation. And I'm trying to change the fortune of it, to stop it from being a declining fund that helps people, to being a fund that's going to survive for a bit longer and be there for pet owners in distress in the future, because it's much needed.
Definitely. I mean, as you say, if you're going to give the money out, you've got to get some money in to have it in the first place.
Yes. And it was lovely that they had all that money at some stage, but it gradually got smaller. And that's the thing. It was, by the time I turned up on the scene, we sort of looked like we had enough for another year or two maximum.
Okay.
If we kept going at the rate that we'd been going. And I said, "Well, no, really, we've got to start telling people what we're doing. Otherwise, this is going to be lost forever."
Yeah, yeah. Now, I've had a look on the website and it says, often you're the only organisation that dog and cat owners, because it's not just dogs, is it? It's cats as well.
No.
Can turn to when they're in distress. So what kind of, you know, situations can tail waggers help with?
Well, the lovely thing about this charity is that we don't have fixed rules and regulations. We are able to take every case on its individual merits. And that means that when somebody is in trouble, they get to talk to a human being, not filling in a form or talking through a fax machine. They actually get someone who's going to listen. And that doesn't mean that they're going to be people are going to be a complete pushover. If someone says they're on the breadline, they'll ask for proof of any benefits that they're on or whatever. But it will mean that it won't necessarily be the case that you're not going to get help because there's one box that's not going to tick. So the majority of cases tend to be things of people having a huge unexpected vet bill that they simply cannot deal with. Often this will be a pensioner maybe, or somebody with a lot of children that's at home and has maybe got some disabled children and just doesn't quite fit into the normal benefit structure to get definite payment through the PDSA or any other means. And it would often be that they've taken on a rescue dog that they didn't foresee was going to have a huge problem with, maybe a hereditary problem. It'll be something that they've done the best to look after the future. They may have taken out pet insurance, but they found that they're not covered for the condition that the dog is now suffering from.
Yeah.
And it won't be a case that we can wave a magic wand and all the bills will go away. Very often the charity will give a donation for a percentage of the cost.
Mm.
Or sometimes the charity will actually look at the case and say, well, is there another way we can help? Because very often people have got a dilemma and they just don't know what to do next. And it may be that just talking it through with somebody that's got a lot of experience may be able to find a solution that they alone couldn't reach.
Yeah.
And there's been lots of stories where people have tried so hard to. I mean, one of the most moving ones I was involved in was a really lovely guy who lived alone, had a border collie that was very, very much loved. No problems with the dog. It was middle aged. It was about 6 years old, and this poor chap had discovered that he was terminally ill, and he was devastated because he had to put his life in order to go into hospital with the prospect that he wasn't going to come out again.
Yeah.
He sold his house and he had this 6-year-old dog and he thought, I will approach one of the charities that says, you know, we might put a healthy dog down. He went everywhere. Nobody would take his dog.
Oh.
And he tried every shelter in his area and he was running out of time. He had only a few days before he was going to hospital. And he phoned us up and says, the only option to me is to have this dog put to sleep.
Oh.
And it's a healthy dog. It's a loved dog. I desperately don't want this to happen. And as a charity, we got involved. It's not really something that money's going to solve. But we got on the phone and we rang round and we told this story instead to the press offices of the charities rather than the front end where he'd been going in, you know, the normal route you go as a punter.
Yeah.
And we got the dog taken and we got it placed and he was just so grateful.
Yeah.
Because he was able to know that his dog was going to find happiness with someone else and he just needed that burden taken off him. And
yeah.
And we know for a fact that no one was even speaking to this man and hearing his story. And our little tiny charity, that didn't eat into our funds. It just took a little bit of time and a little bit of persuasion. And those are the sort of ones that really we feel, if we weren't there, what would have happened?
Yeah.
That man, I mean, it's already a tragedy, but he would have just been so bereft to think that his dog was going to suffer too.
Yeah. I mean, as I say, you gave that man such peace of mind then. I mean, as you say, you can't make things better, but you can help him and you can say, well, that's okay, this dog you love is going to be okay. Because we do love them so much. This is what I'm thinking. And exactly as you said, they just mean so much to you. And to have that resource to turn to and just be able to say, look, help me, you know, as you say, you're very close to the situation when it's your dog, but to be able to talk to someone that's a little bit removed and can think it through and say, well, try this, try that, you know, that must be wonderful for people to have that to turn to.
And very often, by talking to somebody, you find much more of the story than you would by getting into complete a form. At the last meeting of the charity, the secretary is a volunteer, lovely lady called Carol, said that she'd been talking to a family on the phone who, on the face of it, needed some help with, I think it was epilepsy medication for their dog. And if you'd have seen it, you'd have gone, well, you know, that's a long-term problem. For many charities, they won't give help for long-term drugs. It's only acute problems that they will give assistance to, because they will say, well, we'll give you some money, but that's going to go on for years and years and years. You've got to make a decision. But when she was talking to the family, she discovered that one of the children in the family had a terminal illness and needed... the whole family was so dependent on the dog for cheering them up, for giving them stress relief. The fact that a cold decision of we can't afford the medication for our dog, we're going to have the dog put to sleep, on top of the personal struggle that was going on elsewhere in the family, was just too much to bear.
Yeah.
And the fact was, some help sourcing the drugs. I think we've got wonderful veterinary advisors on board. We've got Emma Milne, gives so much time to this charity free of charge. She was able to talk to the vet and find an online drug service that cut the bill back in price, but it was still veterinary approved. Everything was okay, and we were able to give some relief to the payments on that dog for a few months. To get them through what was a tremendously traumatic period for the whole family. And it those sort of things, if you were having a fixed policy of who you will help and who you won't help, that would have, no one would have ever known the story behind the story. Mm. And it would have been judged as to, oh, the criteria of, oh, it's not acute care, that's not something that's going to get better, we can't help.
Yeah.
And sadly, for many, many people, that's the message they get when they phone the big charities, because when you do get big, you can't start making exceptions. It starts becoming much more corporate, and there is room for little tiny charities that, you know, can't make a big financial difference to people's lives, but occasionally they can make a big difference. And I think that everyone involved in this little charity is so dedicated to keeping it going, because we just fear if it goes, you know, where will these people go to? Because they do rattle around the system until they find someone who will stop and listen.
Yeah.
And at the moment, very often, we're the only place that people can talk and call.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say that personal touch, you know, if you know of a case, you've got connections. You've mentioned Emma Milne. She's got connections as well as her own veterinary knowledge. So often, you know, you can say, oh, I'll ask so-and-so that. And it's, as you say, it's that personal touch.
Yeah. And also, with my blog, it's been so useful. Like, when we had the case last year of Caroline, the girl that had been homeless with her dog, a terrible victim of domestic violence, so she just walked from the house with nothing but her dog. And she'd ended up homeless. And thankfully, a wonderful shelter in Wales had taken them in and had found them sheltered accommodation. But Caroline was struggling with the bills, because going with no job, suddenly having to pay service charges of gas and electricity on very, very limited benefits. It's £59 a week that the single person would be on if they're in that situation. She was struggling to feed herself and her dog, and very often she would go without food. But she was not going to give away her dog, because that was all she had. And she contacted, the person that the charity contacted us, the shelter charity, got in touch with us, the Welsh Housing Association, and said, is there anything Tailwaggers could do? And we sort of went, well, we haven't really got enough money to feed a dog indefinitely. And I put it on the blog, and within 24 hours, the managing director of Organic Pets got in touch and said, well, I'm a woman, I've had, you know, trouble in my life. I totally identify with what Caroline's going through. Of course we'll feed her dog. And for, I think it's about a year now, Caroline's dog has been having some wonderful food delivered. And since then, we've had another case where, I put it on the blog, and two pet food manufacturers came forward and said, yes, we'll help. And you just think, well, if people didn't know that there were people out there struggling to keep together with the pets that they love, then these people would become separated. and yeah. another dog would end up in rescue, and another person would be broken and just already miserable with trauma happening in their life, would just be even more unhappy.
Yeah.
And it's you know, that again didn't cost anything to a big company or even a small company, just feeding one dog. It's not going to save the world, but it is going to change somebody's world. Mm. And people get a real buzz out of being able to help somebody.
Yeah.
And those sort of cases, they do still keep popping up. And you think, yes, you can't start a charity just for one little niche. But if you can be a little flexible charity that can, you know, use a bit of elastoplast here and there and help people stay yeah. together with their pets. Because very often the people on the breadline weren't on the breadline when they started having these pets, or even if they were, they made provision. And sadly, things have changed. The insurance policies they've taken out are not as comprehensive as they once imagined them to be,
yeah.
and they've got caught out. And it can happen to anybody. And yeah. I think that's the thing, is that more and more this is happening, and that's why a little charity that was getting smaller and smaller really needs to start getting bigger again to make sure that, with the credit crunch particularly, there's many, many more people now getting caught out and wanting to stay together with their pets and get over adversity.
Mm.
And I'm hopeful that we've turned this charity around just in time, and people will realise that raising money for a little charity makes a huge difference. That one person running a marathon, one person, you know, getting their local school to fundraise for a charity that previously no one had heard of, that makes a significant difference, because small charities don't have the overhead. They don't have the money that you give goes straight into people's pockets that really, really need the money, and that small amounts of money can change people's lives.
Yeah, yeah. And the cases that you've told us about there, those people really were at a point where they needed to have their pet with them or to have their pet looked after. But, you know, it's when you're low that dog that comes up to you and puts his head on your knee and you think, okay, I can face today, we'll face tomorrow, but I've got my dog. And that's when you really need that companion, isn't it?
Definitely. Well, we've just, another front, we've just done our Dog of the Year competition through the magazine Dogs Today. And some of the 12 stories that we picked for that really do show that the dog doesn't have to be an assistance dog to save a life or change a life.
Mm.
The eventual winner, it was a boxer that's a pet, and the owner just says unreservedly, "I would not be alive today if it wasn't for this dog."
Mm.
And she's absolutely convinced that up until the point she got her dog, she had several suicide attempts. But since she's had her dog, she will no longer risk losing her life, because she has to be there for her dog.
Yeah.
She has to support the dog. The dog supports her. And you know, there was nothing else was going to sort her out. Life had dealt her some terrible blows. But the dog has cheered her up and totally turned her life around. And she told us her story. She'd never told her story before. She was a reader, and she's been very brave and told everyone what she's been through. And you just, yes, that quality that dogs seem to bring to people, anything you can do to keep people with their pets, because it really, ultimately, I'm sure dogs save the NHS a fortune, because I think we are so much better off for having them around us.
Yeah.
And people underestimate that in the equation. I mean, there's plenty of people like Caroline fleeing domestic violence. There's lots of charities for women fleeing domestic violence, but they want you to put your dog in foster care.
Yeah.
And at that very point, when your whole world's fallen apart, the last thing you need to be is away from the one thing that loves you unconditionally and you love it. And, you know, Caroline said, you know, faced with the prospect of going somewhere warm and cozy and putting my dog somewhere, who knows where, but safe, or sleeping on the street. Yeah, streets are much more attractive.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Where can people find out more about Tailwaggers?
Well, the internet's probably the best mm-hmm. way to search for us, because we are such a tiny little charity that there's no big swanky office or there's a lady manning a phone at night and has got an antiphone, and it really is tiny. But email is great. But anyone just search Tailwaggers Club Trust on the internet, we'll find the site, and there's an email link there. Email is the best way to contact us, because we can pick that up at all times, and everyone who works around the clock on this anyway. Emma is amazing, the amount of times that she just totally gets her teeth cut into something. Or if we've got a case, you know, she will talk to vets and vet nurses and really get to the bottom of what the prognosis is on the dog and what's the best course of action. And we've also now grown another trustee recently, Neil Flynn, who does the pet insurance doctor part of the magazine. And so many times people have got pet insurance but have had trouble getting paid out and have just taken the first no from their insurer and have been ended up with thousands of pounds worth of bills. And Neil has managed to go in there and negotiate on behalf of the clients that's been turned down. And he recently got a decision on a £2,000 vet bill totally overturned.
Wow.
And these people had put it on their credit card and couldn't afford to pay it back, but he managed to get the insurer to pay out. Mm. And that more and more is a service that I think will be reliant on, because unfortunately there are now so many companies providing pet insurance, and times are really hard for all of those financial services, and they're getting more and more tricky with the small print, and the end consumer really could do with their hand-holding on a lot of these claims, because it's far from clear what's covered and what isn't covered.
Mm, yeah. Well, it sounds like you've got a fantastic team of people at Tailwaggers.
Yeah, that's it. There's not many of us. We're still trying to grow, trying to get a few more trustees.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're finding that the ones that are there really, really just love it and just feel we're making such a difference. But it's a joy to be part of it. And to the buzz you get when you turn someone's, you know, you're able to sort somebody's problem out is tremendous. It's so rewarding. So if anyone's interested in being a trustee, do get in touch. We'd love to have a few more volunteers.
Okay. That's great, Beverly. Thank you ever so much. Is there anything else that you'd like to say about Tailwaggers, or do you think we've covered it?
No, just anyone who wants to raise some money, you know, delighted. But we've actually had two legacies recently, which we had no legacies for, I don't know, about 15, 20 years. But I think if people know it's there, people will make provision for it, because it takes a long time for legacies to come to fruition. Oh, thankfully, because people obviously, hopefully, stay around for a long time. But we were recently made the only beneficiary of someone's will. So the message must be getting out there that this is a charity that does change lives. But it's just so much easier for people to go for a household name if they want to leave their money to charity. But some of the smaller charities in all sectors really, really just so desperately need the money, and that what is a tiny donation to other charities is an enormous one to a small charity. And I think that, you know, if anyone is thinking of making charitable donations, really, really look around and just see, will my money make any difference? Or, you know, get the annual reports of all these charities and just see how much money they're getting in, and you'll be surprised. Some of the big household names are so very, very wealthy that, you know, really your money will just disappear in that huge big vat of cash. Whereas if you go to a tiny charity, whether it's a local charity or whether it's our charity, you'll find that the money will really make a bigger difference, because the percentage of money these people are getting, I mean, people are absolutely getting through on a shoestring at the moment all over the country on little tiny charities. And I do think that because they haven't got the money to go on television or tell people in sophisticated adverts what they do, people just don't think of them, and they just think of the first name that they know. And if it's your life savings, choose carefully where it goes.
Tail Waggers, a small charity that makes a big difference to people's and dogs' lives. If the weather outside is frightful, stay by that delightful fire and check out the links on the Dogcast Radio site to the Tail Waggers website, to Beverly Cuddy's blog, to the Dogs Today website, and to the Dogs Today Think Tank blog. A dog's rules for Christmas. They will bring home packages which they call gifts. They won't think it's funny if you rip them open, no matter how great they smell. If you take some video of your dog over Christmas, do upload it to our new video section. And the same goes for photos of your dog, only put those on the photo section, obviously. Our quotes between items in this show have been a dog's rules for Christmas. So let's finish off with the most important one. And this one is really important. A man dressed in red with a white beard and a very loud laugh may emerge from your fireplace in the middle of the night. Don't bite him. We'd like to wish all of you a joyful Christmas and a safe and happy New Year. We'll be back in 2009. How did 2008 go past that quickly? So, until then, look after yourselves and your dogs. Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121 288 0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315-849-2022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121-288-0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
Did you hear about the dog who ate some Christmas decorations? He got tinselitis.